Well, they say that April showers bring May flowers, but I know that for a lot of you, that June downpours brought wet basements and a whole lot more. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talk about the rain, man. We had it for a few months, and if you had a wet basement, guess what? You were not alone. Happy to have with us Chad Spate, who owns Chad's Carpentry here in Madison. Chad, always great to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back.
Yeah, and with us for the first time, John Gishnock. He owns Formacology. It's a Wisconsin-based landscape design, build, and care firm, and he balances his time between roles of ecological designer, your project manager, advocate for more sustainable approaches to landscaping. And John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. Glad to be here.
And, you know, we're going to talk about a whole variety of things today, but we certainly want to address water issues, and we'll take a look at problems associated with your home other than water. But let's begin with water. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post actually photos. Maybe you've got a photo of something going on with your landscape or with your home, and we can take a look at it and see what we can offer up. And let's turn to water and landscaping. John, landscaping can play a big role in correcting water issues.
It sure has. And with the advent of things like rain gardens and bioswales, and the use of native plants at the residential scale, we're coming up with not only functional solutions to manage water in the landscape, but also solutions that look good too.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want something that looks good. What are some techniques for creating landscape that helps to draw that water away from the foundation?
You bet. Really, at the outset, if you're thinking about water as you design a landscape, you're going to be much better off than treating water as an afterthought. So we're now designing landscapes rather than bringing in soil to create raised beds for perennials and shrubs. We're now decreasing or depressing our planting beds. Hmm. We're turning our downspouts towards these depressions. We're filling them with plants that like wet feet and are very hardy. And now we use these plants and our little depressions to help us soak up rainwater and get it back into the ground where we want it, rather than running off and creating trouble with basements or even our local waterways.
Yeah. I know you're particularly interested in sustainable gardens and native plants, so this is kind of how you incorporate some of your philosophy into your work.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for bringing up throwing the softball here to bring up native plants. So yeah. Native plants are tremendous because they have uber deep root systems, often 4 to 8 feet deep. And so these plants pierce through tough clay, tough soils, and they create capillaries into the ground for water to go. So, you know, hands down, native plants really are a great component of a rain garden. And maybe just for your listeners, a native plant would be a plant that is indigenous or found here back in pre-settlement days. So these are the very plants that blanketed the Midwest many years ago.
And many of them very beautiful plants. You know, I thought about this before. I was at a development, let's put it that way, a building development not in Madison, but in the Middleton area. And looking at, it was kind of on a hillside, and I'm looking at the row of houses that are kind of descending down the hill. And just from my looking, I thought, man, that water, I'd hate to be the one that's sort of two or three houses down because of the way the water, it looked like water was going to flow. You really have to think about this when you don't want to fix your problem and then create a problem for the guy right next door or two doors down or whatever.
You bet. And when it comes to working side by side with a remodeler, it has to be kind of a group effort for dealing with this water. So maybe we can do things in the landscape. Most times we can, but sometimes that's just not enough. And as you mentioned, Larry, if you're at the bottom of the bowl, per se, here, you may have to really have a team approach, a gutter contractor, a remodeler, and a landscape architect.
And Chad, what does the building code require to make sure that water is not a problem in a modern structure?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, down at the foundation level, there's damp proofing that we do to foundations, and older homes don't have this. So this is something that's only been in the building code for a few decades, and you know, we still see homes that don't have it, that aren't that old. So concrete and particularly cinder block are very porous, and so they can allow that water to come in. So we want to make sure that we're shunting the water away. But when it is up against the house, we've got that damp proofing. And then once you get up above the ground level, you have different types of waterproofing that are done. Something that we always talk about with our clients is when you build a home, it should be redundant. There should be multiple systems that are going to keep the water out. So on older homes, tar paper was put on the exterior prior to the siding or the masonry. And that was the old-fashioned way to keep the water out once it got behind whatever the primary siding or sheathing material or exterior sheeting material is. So, and obviously the same thing is done on a roof. So you have a layer of tar paper or some sort of subsurface that keeps the water out so that if water gets beyond the shingles or beyond the metal or whatever your roof, your primary roof material is, hopefully that secondary layer will be there to keep the water out. We flash around windows and doors, and this is required by the building code, but it's not always done per the code. One thing that I often point out to consumers is that pretty much all of the flashing details and waterproofing details are really never inspected by a building inspector. That is a part of the process that you really have to rely on the contractor or the individual that you've hired to do those things right, because no one is typically looking at it and saying, yep, this is all as it should be. It's going to keep the water out.
Yeah.
But it is there in the building code.
I had some experience, very negative experience with that at one point at another home many years back where the flashing was just not done right. And the first big rain, we had all kinds of water in the house. And you know, your spouse is never happy. You're never happy either, but your spouse is particularly never happy when something like that happens.
Sure.
Well, Bob in Oconomowoc has a question for you guys. Let's go there. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thanks for the show. Have an older house, about 60-some years old, and in the basement, just finding out now that someone has done some patchwork on the ground level of the basement. It's concrete, but water still comes in, and we've kind of re-landscaped a little bit around the foundation outside and got the downspouts kicking out a little farther and put in some expandable concrete downstairs. It still likes to seep in kind of up through the corner of the floor and the sidewall. So I'm thinking I got to dig down along the foundation. When I'm down there, I guess I don't know what I'm going to do. And it sounded like there's some damping or something. I'm just curious what that would be.
Yeah, it's a common problem, and it's a great question. There are different sorts of materials that can be applied to the side of a foundation. Essentially, you apply them with a coarse brush. They're often tar-based, petroleum-based products that you clean the surface and then you apply this product, and it has some flexibility to it, but it will help to seal up that masonry wall. And certainly that's the best approach. Is I always say you start at the outside, at the source, you shunt the water away. Then if you can get to the surfaces and seal them, you do that, and then additional steps can be taken on the inside as a last resort.
And you've talked in the past about making sure you've got to grade the ground, sort of grades away from the home to begin with, and that it's not depressed so that the water might just sit along the edge of the house.
Correct. That's very important. And then the other thing is that goes hand in hand with this is You can't make the mistake of building the ground up too much so that wood surfaces on the home, the actual wall, are in contact with the soil, because the siding and those surfaces are not designed to be in contact with soil. And if you were to do that, you have to take other steps to make sure that that exterior wall is protected.
But I will say, my sister's home, she was having water in the basement, and I went over and we sort of regraded, and it went away. The problem went away for a pretty cheap. For pretty cheap.
Yep.
So that's something to consider too, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Gays Mills. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. We have a newer construction. It's just a slab. My question is, we have a little hillside, maybe 12, 14 feet up, of course, fresh dirt and stuff, and about 12, 14 feet before it gets to our building. We put the netting on with some ryegrass and seed mixture. Is there something better a person can use to keep that soil in? Because every time it rains, of course, that mud just wants to come in over the driveway.
It depends on the seeds that you put down along with the cover crop. I think the best solution, or a solution that we recommend, is seeding with native wildflowers and grasses. So those deep-rooted plants we were just talking about can also be bought in seed form, as well as a live plant. And here in Wisconsin, we're blessed with some of the most fantastic native plant nurseries in the Midwest. Under the blanket, cover crop and native seed is the approach. You're late in the season, so some watering would help. The cover crop is supposed to germinate in 10 to 14 days to get you the short-term stabilization that you want, and then the natives will, of course, take a little bit longer to germinate. If you wanted to supplement that planting, and I don't know how big the area is, you could buy live plants and then plug those into your blanket on the slope to help speed up that process. But if your goal is to not mow that slope, hold the soil in place. Bio blankets and native seed and cover crop is one of our favorites.
Yeah. And attractive, too.
You betcha. Multiple blooms. I mean, thanks again, Larry. The beauty of using native wildflowers and grasses is you can customize that mix, working with groups like companies like ourselves, or directly with a nursery if you're more of a DIYer. But you can customize a mix to really have a suite of flowers that bloom from mid-May all the way till October. And even when the flowers are done, up come the native grasses that look awesome all fall and winter. So that's our pitch. It's a four-seasonal planting, aesthetically speaking.
All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions as we take a look at landscaping to avoid water issues. That's one of the topics, but we'll also talk home repair and home maintenance issues, others as well, with our two guests for today, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Gishnock, who owns Formacology LLC, a Wisconsin-based landscape design, build, and care firm. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer, here today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're having some fun talking about how to keep your basement dry and how to fix up those problems around your home with our two guests for today, Chad Spade and John Gishnock. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also post a photo on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you've got a photo you want to share about an issue relating to your house, for example, put it there at The Larry Mueller Show. Lisa in Sheboygan emailed us and said, I always have wondered how houses under construction can be drenched with rain as the framing and insulation are going in. How in the world do they dry out so that it doesn't cause mold or problems with wetness down the road? That's a very good question, John. Or Chad, excuse me.
No problem. It is a great question, and it's certainly really important that you basically dry. It's called drying in the home or making it watertight before you start putting in materials that are going to cause problems. So certainly, I hope not many homes are getting insulated prior to being dried in, because that is something that you wouldn't want to apply of any material, really, other than a foam board material that is able to get wet. But houses are very wet often when they're constructed. The wood has some moisture content in it. And then a lot of the materials we add to a home when we build it also add moisture. For example, when drywall is put up and all that mud is applied, there's a tremendous amount of moisture that literally is given off through the process of drying. So any water that has been absorbed by building materials and then water that's part of the construction process, that has to be essentially expelled, and the house is going to dry out during that period of the first year. Typically, it's not a problem, but some houses, just due to maybe a few details that were missed along the way or extraordinarily wet weather during that critical phase, people can really see some problems with this, because the house gets tightened up and sealed up. And then all that moisture is trapped inside, and it's going to be expelled. So, the only other thing that I'll just add to that is that typically what's put up for a vapor barrier on the just behind the drywall or the plaster, often a plastic sheeting is installed. And one of the reasons that we recommend against using that plastic sheeting is that if there is any moisture in that wall, it's never going to get out through that plastic sheeting. And the natural physics of a home tend to pull the moisture from the wall to the inside in our heating climate. And so you want that drying to be able to occur. And also, if there's a minor water leak where this water we've been talking about from the outside, if that were to get into the wall, a minor leak, we'd want that water to be able to also dry into the home. Old homes essentially did this naturally because the walls were hollow and there was no real vapor barrier. But once we insulate a home, we do have to have a proper vapor barrier. But we put up a smart barrier now. Essentially, it's a product, and there are various products out there that do allow a little bit of drying to occur when the humidity is high. And so...
Cool.
Yeah.
Amy in Appleton has a question for you guys. Hi, Amy. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. One of you gentlemen mentioned wet feet plants, and I have a planter that's permanent about 3 feet deep, and the only thing that grows successfully is weeds. I was wondering, it drains very slowly, and I was wondering if you could give me some specific suggestions for something like that.
Is it in full sun? Is it a shady area?
Half and half. Half and half. Shady in the morning and sun in the afternoon.
And is it clay kind of soil, or is it?
It's mucky.
All right. Well, it's wet. Yeah. Okay. But it's not sand. That's for sure, because it's not draining fast, at least. All right. Well. Yeah. Let's turn to John Gishnock. John?
It sounds like you're probably going to want to be using plants that like really wet feet, even some that don't dry out as fast as some of our wetlands do in nature. Plants like our native iris, broadleaf arrowhead, provided that will stay wet enough in there. There are a couple of fantastic plants that will look good in there. Maybe, Amy, I'll refer you to a plant list that's available for download on our resource section. But I've got two rain garden plant lists there. And the species are broken out by clay soil and silty and sand soil. And based on what I've heard you describe, I would stick to the portion of the clay soil species, because those tend to like to be waterlogged longer.
And so, again, the two that you did mention were...
Yeah, we have a native iris, blue flag iris. We have our arrowhead, which is an arrow-shaped leaf that likes really wet feet. Sweet flag is an iris-like plant that has a nice lemony scent to it. There are a couple of sedges. If you get some shade, maybe even cardinal flower. It's a short-lived perennial, but that would add some nice color to that space as well. But there are probably 10 or 15 plants that would do well in there beyond what I've mentioned.
And I think we have a link to your your site on my Facebook page, but do you have the, what's the name of your site?
You bet. Thanks, Larry. www.formecology.com, and that's form as in art, and then ecology as in nature, all one word.
Okay. And
all right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And while we're at it, Chad, you've got a site too, haven't you?
That's correct. ChadsCarpentry.com.
It's very straightforward. ChadsCarpentry.com. And I also have a link on my Facebook page to his as well. We have Jason and Madison. Patty or Perry, we'll get to you in just a second, but I wanted to get this email in from Jason and Madison. We had a little water in our basement once or twice a year. There are a bunch of chipmunks, or maybe 13 line ground squirrels, that have dug tunnels outside that part of the house. I feel like the chipmunk tunnels are feeding water toward the part of the foundation. What can I do to fill those tunnels, and are there good plants to plant on that spot? What do you think, John? Have you?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards maybe it's not just the chipmunks as well causing the water issue. I think certainly the chipmunks could be bringing more water to through their tunneling, but I would really just, it'd be nice to see the slope and the grading next to the house there and make sure it isn't too flat and it is sloping away. I'd love to look at the downspouts, because I'll tell you, most of the calls we go to when they have water issues, it's clogged downspouts, leaky downspouts, and disconnected downspouts. And, you know, you just get so busy with our lives, we don't get out and check those often enough. And that's, as Chad said, sort of starting out to end or top to bottom, we look up first. If you can move the chipmunks out of there, that'll probably help, a safe way to do that. But I would say having the area a little bit more thoroughly inspected, because I suspect there's something more than just the chipmunk issue.
You need, what's the slope you need away from a house? What's the grade percentage? Is there a... There's something.
Yeah, most 2% is the general number that they kind of throw out there, a safe number. That's a 2 foot of fall over 100 feet, 1 foot of fall over 50, six mm-hmm. inches over 25. It doesn't have to be a great slope, but it does have to slope. Mm-hmm. And, boy, I see a lot of houses that don't have that slope.
Or inverted.
Exactly.
The slope is going the wrong direction.
Towards the house.
Yeah, yep. Toward the house.
Yep.
Oh, man. Perry and Madison, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, hi there. I have kind of a strange house. I have a parapet roof and a rubber, you know, membrane on that. But there's these lookouts, these soffits that go all the way around. And about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, actually I think it was 10 years ago, I had a contractor redo the all the carpentry, because that had been rotted out after 20 years, had a roll roofing on it, and then replace it with a rubber roof. But they put the rubber roof down and used seam tape at the outside edge to terminate it. And that, of course, you know, created like puddling and a little channel for all the water to go in. And so consequently, I think it began rotting probably right away after it was installed, after that work was done. But I didn't notice it till about 9 or 10 years later, and they were nice enough to come and take a look at it, but basically said, you know, it's after 10 years, and yeah, that's the way people do it. And, you know, but I've since looked at the rubber roofing supplier, Mulehide's materials, and that's not the recommended way to use that stuff. So I was wondering if that's something I should do, like small claims, or if it's something, you know, like I could maybe get the original contractor, possibly suggest to them to like do just the carpentry, and I would, you know, like some compromise where I would pay for the mm-hmm. rubber, or if anybody has any ideas how to handle something like that.
All right. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that. You know, I do know that rubber roofing is something that very much typically we tell people with a rubber roof, you're looking at 10 years. If you're lucky, you get 20 years out of a rubber roof. It's not a material that is going to last 30, 40, 50 years. And so it's common to see failures. And I know with the heavy rains that we've had, I know of two people that are friends in Monona that have rubber roofs that are less than 5 years old that have failed this summer. You know, whether it was the hail or the extreme temperature changes that we've seen. I mean, it's just, but there are a variety of products out there that can be used on a flat roof surface. And I guess we have, you know, our dear native Frank Lloyd Wright to thank for all of the flat roofs in the Midwest. And generally, I would say the best way to deal with a flat roof is to add some pitch to it. Prior to putting down whatever material that is essentially on a low-grade roof.
Can you add some pitch to, say you've got a deck on the second floor of your house and it's an outside deck and you it's but it's flat. Can you add a little pitch to that and still make it usable for having tables or whatever out there?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, typically you have a choice to make when you're going to have a so-called flat roof and then a patio or a, right. or a balcony. One option is to have the primary roof with more of a pitch and then to build on top of that some sort of a less pitched surface.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that we have to be concerned, particularly if it's a wood structure, that could puncture. And that's another thing. I mean, when you have a roof, if you're putting things up on that roof, certainly that can, whenever you have something on a roof deck, that can puncture and then cause that roof to fail. There are some particular materials out there that are designed for a balcony or a patio. Some of those materials are applied on top of the flat roof material. There's a very interesting product, and there are variations on this product that use recycled rubber tires to create thick mats that go down on a roof deck. And those are a relatively safe, or I say safe, meaning that they're not likely to puncture the roof deck and that they also provide a very nice surface on which to then walk around and to put patio furniture.
We actually have that on our second floor area. That's very nice.
Yep. And we've done that for a number of clients over the years. And then there are some other materials that are literally designed to be walked on and to have patio furniture on, but the fear that I always have with those products is that you still essentially have just the roof deck that is providing you with the protection. And even though those tend to be somewhat redundant, you know, you've got, you know, an eighth to a quarter of an inch of material there that's keeping the water out.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. And so in Perry's case, 10 years, I'm just thinking about this, but if it was me, I'd probably go back to the contractor and see, possibly work something out, but I think it'd be a difficult issue to resolve in your favor in court after 10 years.
Well, they've clearly done wrong. Instead of what they should have done is wrap the rubber around the edge of the roof and put the termination strip at 90 degrees, you know, so that the water just rolls over the edge completely instead of being trapped up, you know.
Yeah.
It's a simple fix, and I actually suggested it when they were putting it in, but then they were like, you know, you're just trying to be an engineer, and we, you know what we're doing. So that's part of the...
Yeah, that's part of it, too. Well, I'd still go back to them, and that's always the first... If you're not happy with somebody's work, you go back to that person, him or her, and say, look, how are we going to resolve this?
Yep, absolutely.
And then if you're still not happy... Then there's the other option that you were talking about, Perry. Thanks a lot for calling. I understand your concern and you know, kind of feeling like you came out on the short end. I can see how you can feel that way. So I wish you good luck, and I thank you again for calling, and I would invite anyone else to call in with their questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Joanne in Menominee Falls is up next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a home that was built in the 1960s, and as most of those ranch homes that were built at that time, they put a like a porch extension. It was opened at that time, and then a concrete slab attached to that in the back of that. Since that process was moving forward, they enclosed the porch area. Needless to say, the concrete pad in the back is cracked. I'm noticing that the water is running towards the house itself, so this wood structure that was put onto this area, you know, to enclose it, is getting wet. So what is the suggestion that I should do? I mean, I've considered buying, you know, kind of like redo the grade, take the concrete out completely, and put in some of those patio blocks that Menards have, and give me some other ideas. I do have a slope in the back, and at the very end of the property, being that it is residential, there was, I guess, at one time a river, because we live right near the Menominee River, that flows, and the bottom end of the grade to the property does maintain a lot of water, and it is clay here, too. So I need some suggestions, gentlemen.
All right. We'll see what we can do. John, you want to start?
You bet. It sounds like we need to get the water out of that area. If we want to preserve your structure, preserve the concrete underneath the structure. I think you mentioned the biggest one probably is checking the grade. Essentially, if it's sloping towards your property, we're going to have to create a swale between that slope and your home to act as a conduit to move that water around the structure, probably down the sides of your house and out to the front, it sounds like, because I suspect the front probably slopes away if your back slopes towards your home. Another thought is sometimes there's options for relocating a downspout to, say, the other side of a structure, and moving it 10 feet to the side yard may help relieve a lot of that water pressure around the structure. So seeing if that's an option, check the downspouts there again and make sure they're working correctly. And I'll now go upslope and make a suggestion for the slope. Are there options for collecting the water on the slope? Probably not cost effective. Be building a flat rain garden on a slope can take some engineering, but maybe deep-rooted plants on the slope to slow water down. So we'll treat the slope like a nature sponge. Consider putting plantings of deep-rooted species on the slope. That could slow water down. And I have one more suggestion. Sometimes working with your neighbors can help. So seeing where the source of water is, if it isn't just your own property that that is the source of water, sometimes neighbors could be helpful. And want to move a downspout, maybe bring a rain barrel in. There's a variety of a couple of things, and maybe having a little closer look would allow us to pinpoint a couple of those.
Yeah, there you go. The rain barrel, I walk through our neighborhood pretty often or jog through it, and one of the neighbors has got the coolest rain barrel set up, and I've coveted that rain barrel set up because it looks like it would be just perfect. You know, it's attached to the downspout, but there's also the relief valve or whatever downspout. I'm not quite sure how it works, Chad, but...
Yeah, well, rain barrels are great provided you actually use them. And then the other thing to keep in mind is that they fill up really quickly a lot of times. And so, you know, they're going to collect it's nice that they collect some water, but then a lot of that water is going to continue to move on. So you do definitely want to design that well.
Yeah, absolutely. We have another question here from Carrie, who emailed us and wants to put in new gutters and wondering what type of gutter guard to use that won't spill water over the edge of the gutter in a hard rain.
Well... at the risk of making some of my friends in the industry upset, I have to say I'm not a huge fan of gutter guards. So there are a lot of different products out there, and certainly I think some of them work better than others. But I think at the end of the day, if you're going to collect water, you've got to clean out those things which collect water. Almost any system that we devise to collect water will bring with it whatever other material will flow along with that water. And gutters are culprits. They get clogged up. They do have to be maintained. Certainly, if you hire a company to put on a leaf guard and they have some sort of a warranty or promise that they're going to come back and unclog it or maintain it, then I guess that's a great thing. I just say go with a company that's been around a while. Mm-hmm. I've never really known of a system that performs over the long haul, and so you're going to have to at some point maintain that gutter system.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if, I've been talking to a couple of gutter downspouts, maybe there's an option to go up a size with the downspout. We've at least heard and not seen it not being there during the rainstorm, but heard this over the past year or two that water is just, so much, so fast. And maybe the angle of the rain, too, nowadays, right? Because it's blowing in with 50-mile-an-hour winds, so it's not mm-hmm. always hitting the roof sometimes. It's just hitting the side of the building. But going up, we've had water bypassing the downspouts, just literally flowing past them. So I wonder if it's not gutter guard that we'll get behind. And I agree with Chad's comments, but maybe a larger downspout and gutter system.
Yeah, that could work as well. Talking today about, we've done dealing a lot with landscaping and avoiding water issues or dealing with water issues, with our two guests today, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Gishnock, owner of Formacology LLC. It's a Wisconsin-based landscape design, build, and care firm. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking your home today with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Gishnock of Formacology LLC. And we've zeroed in a lot about water issues, but we can take other questions as well. John in Mequon, though, has a question, I think, relating to water. So let's go there. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry and guests. Mine is related to water. Of course, during the tsunami we've had recently, my eaves were overflowing, and there was all kinds of leaf debris that were caught at the downspout area. So I got out there, and I used a little home sink Roto-Rooter and open that up, but knowing that all went downstream and this is channeled out to the street. I live in a slope in this 35-year-old home. I don't know whether that is open or not, and if it is clogged, that large conduit pipe with debris, how would that be cleared out? I mean, maybe a larger electric Roto-Rooter that can go to the street?
So you're talking about the downspout being plugged, or
yeah, the downspout is connected to a very wide pipe that then drains to the street.
Okay, all right. Well, what do you guys think?
If that were clogged,
yeah. Well, how would you get? How'd you get it out? Probably at a snake. Like,
yeah. Is there a clean out on it, or does it just disappear and then 30 feet down the...
Yeah, it disappears.
You really may be limited. When we do put pipe underground, we tend to put clean outs, especially at the bends and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, because once you put it underground, it's tough to get to. A lot of those systems and the pipes that they designed are meant to self-clean. We use a lot less corrugated stuff and more, PVC for that reason. So it sounds like a snake or getting in there with a plumber potentially. Hopefully you only have to do it once, and this is a once in a 10 or 15 year deal that maybe just you didn't get up and get to the leaves and the downspouts fast enough. So
a snake probably worked is pretty well. My father-in-law has a Rube Goldberg system set up for his for blowing leaves out of his second story gutters. He's got a leaf blower, but he's got this long hose, and it's attached to a rod, and it's just long enough that he goes along that the gutter and blows things out, and it doesn't have any trouble at all. It doesn't have any problem at all with it. He's a pretty
very
handy guy, though.
Yeah, very innovative.
he's a handy guy, and it's not as heavy. I thought, oh man, that's going to be heavy, but no, it's not. He does a good job with that. So something to think about if you've got a leaf blower. There's ways that you might be able to attach a hose to it.
And stay on the ground doing it, huh?
Yeah, he's on the ground.
Right,
no,
it's very
no
safe.
No getting up on a ladder. Eric in Monona, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, I've got a really strange situation related to water and also landscaping. My yard developed a sinkhole next between my house and my neighbor's house. This happened once a couple years ago. I didn't know if it was an old cistern or something like that in there, but the landscape is such that it's kind of a little bit of a dip between our two houses, the water kind of, in a heavy rainstorm, the water from the back of my yard or our yards will kind of funnel down between our houses to the street below. But the sinkhole popped up out of the blue. It was about 3 feet deep. I just happened to notice it and dug it all out. And once I actually dug it out, it was about 5 feet wide and about 3 feet deep. Well, I filled it all in with topsoil 2 years ago, and now it's popped up again, but it's grown. So the original sinkhole is back, but now there's another one, and about 5 feet to up the slope from the first one that came in. So I'm wondering if there could be something going on where there was maybe an old sewer system that was kind of going through the landscape. This is an older part of Monona, going through between the houses that maybe when they switched the sewer system around or whatever that they never filled in or what. But, I mean, I've got an area now about 8 feet by about 5 feet that, I've got fenced off so that my kid doesn't fall into it because, again, it's like 3 feet deep.
Wow.
It's not related it's not related to the gutters or anything like that. It's all underground water that's coming through there, and it's totally open. I mean, I can stick my arm all the way up to my shoulder down below, and it's just a deep hole that size. It's bizarre. I don't. Yeah.
What street are you on? You don't have to give me your address, but what street are you on?
So we're actually really close to the ice cream bait shop over by Schluter Beach on Open Forest.
Yeah.
I live in Monona, Eric, as you may know, and that area, there are a couple of springs, underground springs that flow, and that could be part of what's going on there, but there's a stormwater system is in the process of being rebuilt and will be improved in that part of Monona. And so, one thing you could do is, I don't know if you've talked to the public works director to see if there is any possible infrastructure explanation for it, but there are some naturally occurring springs that are in that part of the city. And sometimes those are the culprit. Because once you've got water moving underground, of course, it can move soil with it, and then that that's how caverns are formed.
Yeah. I used to live on Wallace Avenue, so I was kind of over that way, too. So.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, no, I've been planning on getting over to the city hall to talk to somebody to find out if I can take a look at some old maps or whatever to see if there is some sort of infrastructure there that was there or has failed or something like that, or maybe it is, like you said, maybe it is the springs. But I mean, it's just amazing to me how quickly these things this
developed
up this year.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm not surprised. I'm sorry that you're certainly dealing with that. But I'm also not surprised if you were ever going to have something like that happen. I think with the amount of water that has been moving, both through our just on our landscape and through our stormwater systems and everything, that this. Now is the time we're going to see these sorts of things.
Yeah, and again, who should he contact at?
The Public Works Director.
Public Works Director.
Yep.
There you go. So give it a try, Eric, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call very much. I'm very familiar with that neighborhood. Dave in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, thanks so much, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
My question concerns the corrugated stuff that you bury for your downspouts to get the water underneath the lawn and away from the house. Your guest mentioned that they do something that's rigid. My question is, will a 4-inch corrugated tubing be adequate for an average house roof, or should I go to a 6-inch? Because I have a length of considerable distance to run under the ground. What would their advice be?
Yeah,
I think it maybe lean on the side of being more conservative there. If you had to go up a size, that isn't the worst idea. But we generally are using the 4-inch for most just a single downspout. If you're combining downspouts, you're probably going to want to go up in size. But if we're dealing with a single size, the 4-inch PVC type pipe buried underground, making sure you have the slope that we've been talking about today, so you can bury a pipe flat and still have issues. And then the cleanouts we talked about, which are things you could pick up along with the PVC piping, but having these screw-off tops at grade that will let you get into the pipe and flush it or clean it will be a wise, small investment to do now.
And I would add to that, I know the reason, I've talked to John about this, the reason that we avoid or tend to urge people not to use the corrugated pipe if you can use a clear pipe is that those concentric circles on a corrugated pipe collect debris. And so, and then when you go to clean them, if you put something into that pipe to clean it, every one of those ridges becomes a place where you might catch and then damage the pipe that you're trying to clean. So if you can put in a smooth pipe, that will both clean itself better and you will allow you to mechanically clean it down the road.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Dave. Paul in South Beloit, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I have a... heard the gentleman ask about the Mulehide EPDM roof that he's got on, and wanted to just let maybe your listeners know. I was a roofing contractor for a lot of years, and I did a lot of commercial roofing as well. And what residential customers don't know is that commercial roofing contractors do not warranty the roofing materials because houses are so small. Unless they purchase a warranty through the manufacturer and the installer is a certified manufacturer's contractor, there is no warranty. So I just wanted to let your listeners be aware of, that's a Mulehide roof. Mulehide's owned by ABC Roofing, and if they contacted somebody there, they should be able to recommend a qualified roofing contractor who can get them the residential warranty, which I believe is usually about $70.
Mm-hmm.
And they will avoid years of wondering if their roof was done put on right. Because, every roof needs maintenance. And if people don't follow the maintenance, the recommended routine maintenance that goes along with their roofing system, nobody's going to. The only thing that guy can do is file an insurance claim, and they're going to probably come out, give him some money, but he'll end up having to put another roof on. And if he doesn't use a qualified contractor, he'll be in the same boat 7-10 years down the road.
Chad, comment?
Yeah, well, again, a flat roof has a lot of challenges, and what we often see when we look at a failing roof, we'll see furniture many times up on a flat roof, or planters, or just, a lot of branches and debris, years of things that collect, and that every time a branch falls onto a roof, you've got the potential to puncture a roof, and so these are all things, houses do require upkeep and...
And there you go. Thanks, Paul. Thanks a lot for your input. I really appreciate it. We had a caller call and inform us that one of these, Roto-Rooter type, many of them do downspout cleaning services. So it's just another aspect of their business, and it makes sense that they actually would do this. And Andy in Menominee, hi, thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering why I don't see any builders covering their homes with tarps when they know a big rain is coming, or when rain might be coming.
Yeah, so when you're doing construction, and Chad, what about that?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think, you know, as one of the previous callers had asked, I mean, building materials are designed to have a few wettings prior to being fully enclosed. Mm-hmm. And often building materials are in a lumber yard. They're actually getting wet prior to being delivered to a job site, depending on the material. But, you know, would a builder, I mean, certainly when, as a remodeling contractor, we tarp things as we're building them, but we're having to protect the primary structure that we're connecting to. And so we have that liability and that concern. Mm-hmm. When you have a new building out in a field, you just,
there it goes.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for that question. Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry, John Geschnack of Formicology, our guests. They'll be with us right up until 12:30. News next. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Some of the best investments you and I can make in our home is to help minimize our impact on the environment, and certainly some of the most environmental choices are also the best ways to prevent or address problems with your house. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along as we visit today with Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. And Chad, great to have you back. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
And John Geschnack here for the first time. He's owner of Formicology LLC. It's a Wisconsin-based landscape design, build, and care firm. And John, great to have you with us as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. I'm having a blast.
Well, we're having a lot of fun talking, and we've dealt a lot with water issues, which is, frankly, when I think about it, is not all that surprising given the amount of water we've had. But certainly we can deal with water issues, but we can take care of other home improvement questions as well that you might have. So I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email us with your questions at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Ray and Rhinelander, thanks a lot for waiting. You're on.
Yes. Seems to be a lot of talk about these semi-flat or flat roofs. And I have a question about this. I've dealt with a lot of different roofs, especially with these. What I have is a slight pitch that changes on three or four different directions because of all the add-ons. So doing my research, instead of using standard rolled roofing, which I don't want to use, there's some other products out. One of them is called Top Seal, self-adhesive rolled roofing. It has a 10-year guarantee. I'm going to try using that. It doesn't need ice and shield underneath because it's self-adhesive. We are going to be putting 3/8-inch 4x8 sheets smooth plywood face up for this rolled roofing. My question is, have you heard of any of these expensive rolls of rolled roofing? And do we need to put something over the plywood? They say they don't. Or whatever you might know about this to help to keep water out. And thank you for being on, and I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Ray. Chad Spate, what do you think?
Yeah, well, there are a variety of systems out there. I am familiar with some of these peel and seal products that are out there. And again, it's essentially one layer of protection, and I always get a little nervous about that because, again, we talk about redundancy and wanting to have redundancy in any system that keeps the water out. But for a lot of the flat roofing, that's essentially what you have, unless you go to some of the old kind of the wet applied multi-layer tar systems that can be done, where you have multiple layers built up. With the rubber and with some of these plastic roof materials, mm-hmm. there's some PVC products out there that can be applied. Each one of these manufacturers has their own specifications for how these products are to be installed. what the appropriate underlayment is. There's a product that we've had a couple of clients select, which one of our roofing contractors installs, which is essentially a fiber based product. I believe it's called FiberTite. And it's another option out on the market, which is supposed to last a lot longer and be more durable. But it's a challenge when you have an almost flat or flat surface. I mean, if you have a flat roof, you've essentially got to be prepared for puddling to happen. Because even if you have a perfectly smooth surface, anything gets on that roof and water is going to sit on it. If you have a slight incline, you will hopefully get drainage off of it. But that's a challenge.
I wonder, this is a little bit of an aside because you won't find many homeowners with this, but if we look out the seventh floor window of our Vilas Hall here to another building, you will see all kinds of plants. I mean, that literally the whole roof is a garden.
Right. Well, and then so we could talk about a green roof or a living roof. And, there are some homeowners and then often commercial buildings that, you have a roof and you've got a goat that is up there keeping things in check. that's a whole different design. And many times when you see, I think about Monona Terrace as a somewhat well-known building here in the Madison area that many people have been up on that rooftop. You know, you have a flat roof essentially under these tiles. And if you look carefully at that, you've got individual tiles that are sitting on essentially plastic or rubber feet that are holding up that tile. And there's a roof surface under there, which there's some grade and there are places where the water is being collected and diverted. There are many different sorts of systems.
Yeah.
When you have a green roof, and John, you may know more about this, you've got to have a really good lower layer that's going to keep the water out of that building.
That's for sure. I of course, immediately think of Al Johnson's Swedish restaurant in Door County.
Right.
With his half dozen goats or so that he keeps up on the roof.
Yeah, you bet. We're using plants and a light layer of soil on a roof to help soak up our water, but those two components alone can't do it all. So you still have to have water moving away from the roof, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary in La Crosse, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. I tuned in today just as they were talking about the gutter problems and leaves in the gutter, and there is a product, and it's called Leaf Guard, capital L-E-A-F, capital G-A-R-D. Probably about 16 or 17 years ago, I was at the Onalaska Home Show, and this company had that product there, and my husband was always cleaning gutters, and so we had several trees around our house, and so I said, if we ever have to put a new roof on, I'm going to have them put this on. And it's a one-piece gutter, and I wish I could draw you a picture. And it's of a heavier grade steel, and it's one piece, all one long piece. And it's a larger size. The downspouts are a larger size also. But the design, as I said, is all one piece. And it comes up, and it comes over the top, but it's designed... and I don't know what the physics term would be, but the water runs off, the water runs around this down into the gutter, but the leaves and all the debris actually flow right over the top. Yeah. And it's been on our house now for probably 14, 15 years, and we've never had to clean a gutter. And it works absolutely perfectly. I do have a telephone number. I talked to them a while ago because our church is building a new church, and so I was suggesting this for gutters.
Mm. We'll not give the phone number right now, but if it's LeafGuard, we did spell that out, or you did spell that, and people can go online and get the address. And frankly, there'll be I mean, since we're statewide, the one number probably wouldn't work anyway. But
yeah, I mean, that's one of many solutions out there. And like I say, I mean, we've had clients want this sort of thing, and there are different systems that can be installed. And it's just one of those things where you've got to kind of decide what you want to deal with. The only thing I'll say that and it's the hydrostatic pressure that keeps that water on that cover. I am familiar with the particular system that the caller refers to, and some people are very happy with them. But when we get a torrential downpour, which we've been getting increasing numbers of these events where we get a very high volume of rain in a short period of time, almost all of the systems that we have to collect water are overwhelmed during those times. And my concern is that a lot of these leaf guard systems really function better when the rain is not in a high volume.
Yeah.
And so if you have a problem with getting with water and diverting it away from your foundation, if that's a real concern, one of the things you do have to consider if you put a leaf guard system on is that you're probably not going to collect as much water during a high rainfall event.
But in Mary's case, it's worked great. Here it is all these years.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I'm happy
Mary.
For her.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Peter in Racine. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, gentlemen.
What's on your mind?
Just have a question with getting the water out away from the house during the wintertime with the melting of the snow off the roof into the gutters and then down. You bury the PVC pipe into the ground. How do you keep that from building up ice and stuff during the wintertime? Keep that flowing so that you can get that water out of the gutters?
Yeah, that's a good question. Really maintaining a proper slope in the pipe, water, unless it's dammed up, won't travel uphill. So making sure you have a minimal 2% slope in there, but every percent that you can go a little bit steeper will keep that water moving out. And then as water leaves the pipe, making sure there isn't a source there for water to dam and collect, because you could then force water back up the pipe. So having a good slope in your pipe, and then making sure when the water leaves the pipe that there is no, it is free to flow there as well away.
Okay, but during the wintertime when it's, you know, it warms up because of the sun and then freezes shortly afterwards, is that still going to be a good way of doing things, or maybe not even touch it?
I think making sure you have a slope in the pipe will keep water from backing up during those occurrences.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Muriel in Lake Geneva. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding decking material. We have a very large floating type deck, so it's very close to the ground. It was very good redwood. It's about 25 years old, and it's going to be needing to be replaced in a few years. I maintain it because I don't want the weathered look. I maintain it with a good Cabot stain, but it's a great deal of work, and you start to get the peeling. And I understand there's a new decking material that doesn't require, it isn't wood, but someone has said that it gets very hot and that it warps. Do you know anything about that material?
Well, there are a variety of materials out there. A lot of them are PVC, but there's some other materials that different products that are made out of different materials. It is true that the darker the color of any of these materials, the hotter they will be, particularly if exposed to direct sunlight. And that has been an issue that we're aware of with some of our clients. We generally, if you have a deck that has southern or western exposure, you do have to be very concerned about that. And that's true in general for building materials. But
just keeping it a lighter color?
Well, keeping it a lighter color will help with the issue of the extreme heat.
Right now mine is almost kind of a gray, tanny gray color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can get that color in the
Right. But
that's
would that
correct.
Be light enough? Would that serve the purpose, that color?
Well, it might, and if you and when the one thing I will say, and John can probably speak to this as well, the closer you get to the ground, you have to decide: do you really want a wood structure or a deck? And of course, thinking about these synthetic products might be one way to go, because then you don't have to worry about that wood rotting. But you do have the frame underneath it, and that frame is still wood. And it has to be wood because the PVC materials are not structural. They're only able to do the decking.
Right.
So then you think about, well, maybe it would be more appropriate to simply have a nice patio.
No, I really can't do that. I need the deck, and it's very functional. We've had a very, very large ash tree that was just taken down, but the roots are just everywhere. I mean, it would be very difficult to do that. What do you think are the problems with a new decking material? Do they warp?
Well, in any
some
product,
probably.
Any product, you
wood's
know,
gonna work.
Is going to move. Yeah, wood is going to move around, and so the synthetic materials. PVC, plastic, is going to expand and contract more than almost any product that you would install, and that's one of the downsides to a PVC is that it just moves around a lot. It contracts in the winter and it expands in the summer. And so it has to be installed with pretty large gaps in it so that it can accommodate that movement. But, you know, there are pros and cons to almost any material that you're going to use. And I would say that the challenge that you're dealing with when you're close to the ground is that if you don't have good drainage underneath that deck, that the high moisture content is going to create challenges for any material that you put over top of it.
Yeah.
Even the PVC.
Less so for the PVC, but, you know, the wood structure that's holding it together and all the fasteners, those will be affected by that moisture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it is a problem. So that's not a cure-all, actually, then.
No.
There are problems with that also.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I got rid of our lake home, which we no longer have, but we had a deck on that, and I really got tired of maintaining that deck, and we put in a beautiful stone patio and just loved it. And really, really made it looked wonderful. We no longer had animals underneath the deck. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to stain it every other year or whatever. It was just so much nicer. Of course, a fairly hefty upfront price, but once it's in, it's...
Yeah,
and done properly.
Correct. And just like the deck itself, there are a wide range of materials that can be used and a wide range of costs to have those materials installed. And so, you know, you could put in a patio that would not necessarily cost more. Often a patio can cost less than a deck.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even, you know, to have someone come in and prepare the soil properly, those old roots aren't going to be a problem if the tree is no longer there.
Yeah, if the patio is done correctly.
Yep. Correct.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Muriel. Appreciate your call. I want to give Phil in Crystal Lake, Illinois, a chance to join us. Hi, Phil.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem with water coming in through a window when it rains heavily, as it's been doing now. The house was purchased in January, and the former owner had put in new windows. And the rain now comes off the roof, and there are almost no overhang. Mm-hmm. And the water comes in the kitchen window. It's a two-story house, so the kitchen window's on the first floor.
Does it?
And the humidity is quite high in the house also.
Does it drip in from the, you know, from the top jamb of the window, or where are you seeing the water actually come in?
It seems to come in under the, we don't know exactly where it's coming from. We had an air conditioner in the window, and we took it out thinking that the air conditioner was funneling the water in, but that didn't make any difference.
But you're seeing the water actually in the window?
Yeah, it comes inside into the house.
Okay.
So it sits on the sill? Comes in and sits on the sill?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, so a couple of things about that. Of course, a window needs to be flashed properly at the top, and it's possible that when the window was replaced, that flashing detail was not properly integrated with the new unit. Depending on the type of replacement, sometimes it's the original flashing on the old window that is still there, and there may be a problem with that, and they may not be the new may not be integrated with the old, and so we can sometimes see those problems. So it's a little bit potentially more complicated. But another thing that I'll just mention is that when you install a window or a door, not only does it have to be properly flashed at the top and on the sides, but at the bottom, before you put that unit in, there needs to be flashing done. It's called panning the sill. And a lot of times that is a reason why water gets into a wall, because a window will often collect water at the sill, or there will be wetness there, and it's designed to shed that to the outside. And if... there are statistics that say that about 20 to 25% of new windows will leak at the sill when they come out of the factory. And so the reason that you're supposed to pan the sill before you install the window is so that that water, when it goes through the window, it hits a material that then shunts the water to the outside of the building. And again, that gets back to that issue of redundancy. You know, the building code does speak to installing to manufacturers' specs, and all window and door manufacturers require that panning be done at the bottom. So that could also be contributing to your problems if that wasn't done properly.
Well, that sounds like what it is. Is the panning just a piece of plastic or rubber that goes under the windowsill?
It's often an adhesive membrane that's used to flash on a modern installation. The old style, it was literally a piece of metal that was bent and installed to shed the water. And there's a slight pitch on it, and it shunts the water to the outside, out beyond that tar paper or siding that's on the exterior.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And in 30 seconds here, John, can you tell me, Paula wants to know some deep-rooted plants that can be planted to prevent water erosion.
Oh, you bet. And again, I'll just put in another plug for our native plant nurseries. Reaching out on Google to find a comprehensive plant list will help you. But certainly, we have our blazing stars, our coneflowers, our native penstemons or foxgloves. And of course, those are the flowering species, and our native grasses like side oats, grandma, little blue stem. Those are shorter profile grasses, very deep root systems, easy to grow, will help you hold soil in place.
And we go to your website too, and you've got a list of things that's helpful. And again, your site is?
Thank you. www.formecology.com.
Formecology.com. And Chad, your site is?
www.chadscarpentry.com.
Well, guys, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Gishnock of Formecology, our guest today. Great to have them along. I learned something, and I hope you did too. I bet you did. And I want to thank you so much for listening. Garden Talk tomorrow, we'll be taking a look at plant diseases. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.